And my name is James Hogan. I was born in 1958. I was born into a large family of 13 children, 11 boys and 2 girls. Unfortunately, I was also born into poverty, extreme poverty and alcoholism. In the event, I was taken away from my home in the 60s, 1960s, and I remember being at school, and these children's aid workers came and got us and said, let's go for a ride. So they grabbed me and my younger brother, and we thought we were going to go for a ride. And once we were in the car, they told us they'd make a deal with us that they would buy us some new clothing if we went to this foster home. And at this stage in my life, I never had new clothing, so it was a really big bribe. And I said yes, and they went out and bought us all these new clothes. And it was the first time I remember ever having new clothes. I think it was the first time I had new clothes. And that seemed okay. So they brought me and my brother to this foster home. And the name of the people, the last name of the people is rather ironic, because their last name was Grace. And they fell far from being graceful. Anyway, we got there, and it seemed from the outside like a typical Brady Bunch type of atmosphere. And they talked to the worker as if everything was okay. I remember the first question the lady asked us if we were hungry, and we were very hungry at the time, but I said no, because I didn't want them to know that we were hungry. And we waited till the next morning to eat. She had 3 children of her own, Michael, Mitchell, and Mark. And the 3 M's. Anyway, they used to threaten us, tell us not to pick a certain cereal in the morning, pick the cheap one, like the puffed wheat, and don't take the frosted flakes, that type of deal. So they abused us physically and mentally, and more physically than anything, I guess. And we weren't allowed to eat with them. We had to eat by ourselves, and we had to wait outside in the winter time. I remember being very cold and trying to warm my hands beside the steam that came out of the dryer from the house. And they would let us in after they were done. And if one of their kids thought that there was a little bit too much left over to his liking, he would ask for a little bit more, just so that we would get what he thought we should get. And normally we ate the scraps that they left behind on their plate. And she would complain that we ate more than her husband ate. And I don't know if we did or we didn't, but I remember always being hungry there. so hungry, in fact, I used to wake up in the middle of the night, and me and my brother would crawl from our bedroom to the kitchen, holding our breath, and sneak a piece of bread each. And we'd take it to our room and eat it quickly and put the crumbs down the heater. Well, one day the crumbs blew up from the heat, and the mother found out about it, and she ended up counting the slices of the bread after she reprimanded us and hit us, and she ended up counting the slices so that we could never do that again. And on certain days we would go to this skating rink just for something to do. We didn't have skates, but we would go into where everybody would put on their skates and people would buy hot dogs. And I remember looking at them thinking, gee, I wish I could buy a hot dog. And every time I seen somebody eat one, I would swallow myself, really wanting one, but not being able to have one. And one of her kids came and found us one day and brought us back home, and she said, where were they? And he told them, oh, they're at the ice rink. And she said, well, what were they doing? We're looking at all the people eat as usual. What was his reply? And it made me feel kind of like I was doing something wrong by looking at these people eat. Mm-hmm. And I remember eating from their garbage can one day. There was a piece of meat on the top of the can. I took it. It was hamburger. And I ate it. So I must have been really hungry to do that. And out of the three children, the youngest one, he used to like to play school with us. And he was in kindergarten or something, and in his school room they used to have sandwiches and stuff. So we would play with him just so that we knew he would make us a sandwich. That was part of the game. Mm-hmm. So we would, not really wanting to play with him, but wanting the sandwich, we would go along with him and get the sandwich. And, his mom used to allow him to bring it down so that we would play with him, I guess. And she knew that we would to get a sandwich or half a sandwich, whatever it was. And my brother had a problem wetting his bed, and the mother would take the sheets and throw them at him and say, why don't you bring these to your own mother and have her wash them? Things like that. And the father was very passive. He used to bring us home treats, like a chocolate bar or something. And I remember him giving us one day, and the mother said, look at them, they look like they never had a chocolate bar in their lives. I guess we tore it open and started chomping on it, and maybe we didn't have a chocolate bar. I don't really remember, but for her to say that, it kind of seemed like everything we did, she made it out that we were savages.
Right.
And she was very hard to please, this woman, and the kids, her own kids. Fortunately for both of us, there was a lot of abuse that went on in the basement too, with their kids and me and my brother. And fortunately for us, after about a year of this, my sister came by to visit us, my older sister, and we told her what was going on. And sure enough, within a week or so, we had both been transferred to another foster home. And this was my first encounter with a foster home, my first foster home. And I remember thinking that I would rather be at my real home as it was, regardless of the fact that we didn't have much. At least there we were loved to some capacity, and we knew we didn't have to wait until everybody else ate and weren't treated differently or anything like that.
So when you were in the home, you remember missing your parents and missing home?
Yeah. Even though it wasn't that great, I would rather have been there than where I was at, because I couldn't understand why they were treating us like that. Mm-hmm. And I vowed to go back when I got older and take my vengeance out on them. And in fact, I did go back there, but they had sold their house. I guess they could afford to sell their house after abusing so many children over the years. I'm just assuming that, but they ended up moving anyway and sold their house. And I met the mother years later. She was working at an airport, and she remembered me. And rather than talk to me, she kind of shuffled me through and didn't want to talk or reminisce or anything, because she knew what she had done was wrong. And I was much older then, and I...
So she was working at the airport?
At the airport, yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I guess she wasn't doing foster care back then. Maybe they had cut her off or found out about the abuse that was happening there. I don't think we were the only kids abused there. And so anyway, I wasn't able to find them and talk to them or ask them. I guess kids can be cruel. But that was my first experience with a foster home. Fortunately, I didn't get shifted around too much. My brother ended up going from our original home to our first foster home together, and then we were separated, and he went to this other home where he had to wash in the toilet, wash his hands and his feet and his body in the toilet. And I was sent to where my little brother and a sister at this other foster home. And
foster brothers and sisters are here?
Real brothers.
Yeah.
Real brothers and sister and little sister. And after being there for a while, they allowed my younger brother to come also. So we had four of us in one home, which was really good for us.
How old were you at the home, sir?
I was about 9 years old at the second one. The first one, I was about 7. And they taught us some good values, how to save money and go to church and she was a hard working lady, she had about 6 children, 6 foster kids. 4 of them were us Hogan boys, and a couple other ones. And sometimes they would just throw a big box of grapes on the table and a loaf of bread, and say, go at it, and that was their meal. But we usually had at least 1 full course meal a day. And Sundays were always special. She used to make a big spaghetti dinner, and it was always plentiful and tasty. I always looked forward to that.
Did they ever complain about how expensive everything was?
Oh, yeah. They didn't really get a lot of money for taking care of us, but she I don't think she really did it for the money, this particular woman, because she had so many children. She probably cared for probably about 50 in her lifetime. And some of us, her mommy and my sister, was there when she was a baby, right up until a teenager. So she was kind of like her own almost. And my younger brother stayed. I was there for 9 years myself. So I was a lot luckier than a lot of foster children that got shuffled around regularly, because I was able to find a spot that they allowed us to stay there for a long period of time. And,
do you remember if anything from the home before affected your home that you were in for 9 years? Do you remember if anything?
They would always, this wasn't related to the first house, but the second one, they would tell us that we weren't allowed to see our real parents, and that it would be wrong for us to meet them, and really bad for us to meet our older brothers, because they were bad, and it was a no-no. And the more they said not to, the stronger our will was to find them, and whether they thought they were bad or not. And I guess because they had been in jail or training schools or wherever they were, these foster parents thought and were told by the children's aid that we shouldn't have contact with them. But we did. And I remember meeting my mother, and I ran up to her and I said, "Excuse me, are you Mrs. Hogan?" And she said, "Yeah, who are you?" And it kind of made me sad, and I said, "Well, I'm your son." And she said, "Which one?" And I told her which one. And she said, "Would you like to meet your father?" And I said, "Yes." And she brought me to this place. I thought it was for a car or something, a shack. It didn't look like a house. It looked like a shack. And it was the middle of winter. And I went into this shack, and there was garbage bags on the windows to keep the snow out. And the only stitch of furniture in this shack was an old rusty spring. And my father was crashed out on the spring, passed out. And they had no food or no furniture or anything. And I told my brothers and sisters that were with me and these other two foster kids that were with me not to tell anybody what we had seen. And we vowed to take money from our piggy banks and buy them food. And in fact, we did do that. Tried to help them out, thinking that my mom would always say, "We're going to get you kids back," and we used to believe her. Mm-hmm. She'd give us a ray of hope. It never did happen, but it made us hopeful anyway.
And how old were you now when you met her again?
When we met her, I was in my teens by then.
Yeah, so you hadn't seen her for how long?
I hadn't seen her from the age of 7 till about 13, so 6 years, 6, 7 years. And I was wondering why some people had so much and other people had nothing. I couldn't understand that at the time. And I didn't think it was fair. The that some people lived in shacks, especially in Canada, and had no furniture or food or anything. And the place I was living in, they had a beautiful home and a garden, and were able to care for a bunch of kids.
So this is the thought that I've had as an adult, is, you know, how the, when you saw that your parents were living the way they were, that the foster home was better off. Did you ever, when you were young, think that the children's age should be helping your parents, or did that's only something you thought of later? Or?
I didn't think the children's age should be helping them, but I thought somebody or some, I knew something wasn't right there. I know that my real parents had sent us Christmas gifts that we never received because they wanted to make like they didn't care about us. And we sent them gifts that they never received. I don't know who ended up getting them, but it's kind of... I found out years later they never received any, and we never received any of theirs. So yeah, I guess they really didn't want any kind of type of contact or...
The children's age.
Yes, yeah. And one of them sexually abused my sister, one of the children's aid workers. Trying to tell us that we were bad and my family was bad and our brothers were bad, and meanwhile the same people that were telling us this were sexually abusing us. And, and the foster homes, the abuse there, none of it really added up. Lot of fighting in school, I think probably indirectly because of all this. We were always picked on, and my second foster home, sometimes she'd make us wear girls' clothes or anything that was around. Sometimes it was difficult.
Well, kids can be pretty mean.
So. Yeah. And sometimes she would pick the dandelion weeds and give her fetus a big bowl of dandelion weeds. And, I mean, they're supposed to be good for you, but to have that as a sole meal, a big bowl of them, is ludicrous. Mm-hmm. But, We didn't go hungry there. I can't say we went hungry. Just sometimes we were just given bountifuls of either grapes or bananas or something and a loaf of bread and told to fill ourselves up. And told to tell the teachers at school that we were eating steak and potatoes and pork chops and stuff like that when we weren't really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not really.
Yeah, just pretend.
So you were getting all your physical needs met, basically, but nothing emotionally or like
that? No, not emotionally at all. No. As a matter of fact, I didn't know what love was until I was about in my 20s. I got a taste of it for the first time, I think, in my life that I remember. I had no idea about it. I had a warped idea of what I thought it was, but I marked that wasn't it.
Do you remember them, like, reading bedtime stories to you, or, like, asking you how you feel, or anything like that?
No. No, that stuff.
So now you're in your teens.
Yeah. I ended up having to leave that foster home when I was 15 because I did go to my parents' home and I ended up stealing a bottle of their wine. and drinking it, and I came home. Went back to the foster home a little bit drunk, and they noticed and said, well, that's the end of that. You're going to have to leave, because we won't tolerate that. And I refused to go to school, so the children's aid ended up kicking me out of their children's aid. And I had to fend for myself at the age of 15. So I was on the streets at 15. I lasted till I was 17 by stealing or whatever way I had to. I learned how to survive out there, and I did. Mm-hmm. And without any major crimes, but at the age of 17, I ended up robbing my first bank.
Why did that?
Yeah, I wasn't for the money per se. I mean, that's part of robbing a bank, they give you money, but it was more because I knew I had a big family. I knew that most of them had been in prison or were in prison, and I kind of thought that I had to be like them. Rather, I thought I had to do a crime because I felt that I had to share the same kind of pains my brothers were sharing and go through the same shit they were going through. And I did it, and did it well, too. Went to extremes, and I ended up robbing the bank, and they put us in jail, and there was a big hostage incident, and grabbed all the guards hostage, and one thing led to another. Anyway, I lived off of hatred for about 6 years while I was incarcerated. I didn't know much about love. Like I said earlier, I didn't know anything about it. And then I hadn't been touched for about 4 or 5 years. And I missed that nurturing. And the love part wasn't there. And hatred's a very powerful emotion. You can live off of it. And I did do that. And I was finally released at the age of 22. All I thought was that I had two options, either die or get a life sentence. And those were the only two options I thought that I had. And I strongly believe that I was filled with a lot of negative reinforcement by the corrections and by the judges and the police and everybody. Ever since I was a small little guy, so I believed what they were saying, and it took me a long while to figure out that it wasn't true, and that I was in fact capable of caring and contributing to the community and being a father and going to work and all the things that people do. I found out that I could do that, but it wasn't an easy thing to learn. And I was lucky. I had a girl from a church tell me that she loved me, and I didn't even think I was lovable or that anybody would find me attractive or anything like that. I was really had a bad feeling about what I was and who I was, and I didn't care about what I looked like or about all the scars I had on me. I didn't think it would matter. I thought I was destined to die or end up back in there. So
where did you meet her? You met her?
I met her in Ottawa here at a church. St. Luke's Church.
This is after you were out?
Yeah. out for a short period of time, and I met her. I believe she was godsend, because she said she did save my life. Indirectly, or just by telling me or letting me know that I was, in fact, lovable. And when you've been denied that and you don't know the difference, and somebody tells you and shows you, that makes all the difference in the world. It did save my life. And I did find out that I did father a couple children and have worked for many years and picked up a few trades.
About the scars? Is that something we needed?
I didn't have any coping skills. At one point, I was doing 6 years. Another brother was doing 15. One was found hanging. One was shot to death. We figured by the police. One's up on an attempted murder beef. And these type of things people don't normally have to concern themselves with. But I was going through this, and I felt all my family's pain as well as my own, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And I would cut myself, and the pain of the cut, the physical pain, would erase the mental pain. I would concentrate on physical, and it would make the mental pain go away or subside. And I cut myself for those reasons, and also for the healing process was like a source of love. When you heal, and that was the only kind of love I was experiencing at the time, was the healing process. And I hate to say this, but it actually worked. I don't do it today because it hurts too much, but...
So, yeah, you say it worked, but the only reason it worked is because you didn't have an alternate source of...
I hadn't been taught any other way. I didn't know. I didn't have a clue about how to go about handling it. I hadn't had any type of help in the institutions at all.
When you left the children's day, you were 15. And let's say even 5 years later, do you remember if you ever thought you could go back to them for help, or did it ever cross your mind?
No, actually, I hated them.
Okay.
And I had no respect for them. I did come across some good workers, and I have to admit that they weren't all bad. And because I've seen those good workers, I know that there's good and bad in everything. But I don't really think the children's aid are accountable for a lot of the abuse that the children have gone through over the years and continue to go through today. I don't believe that they really thoroughly check out the foster homes, because we're supposed to be grateful that we're in a different atmosphere or a different place, regardless of whether there's abuse there or not. I don't think they really care, even if they find out and are told. It's still allowed to happen. And I believe there's too many children that need assistance and not enough people to care for them. And because of that reason, they're put into various situations and farmed out to wherever and abused. There's very few successful ones compared to the ones that either end up in training schools, or it seems like it's from a foster home to a training school to a prison to an addict to death. I haven't heard too many success stories come out of the Children's Aid.
When you were inside prison, did you ever find out if there were a lot of foster kids in there? Is that something you talk about or not?
Yes. A lot of them were in foster care at one time. The vast majority of them. So that's why I know that a lot of them ended up in there. Or farmed out to these training schools where they were sexually abused by the priests. In fact, I had four family members that went through that and brought that home with them. So there's a lot of...
So you had lots of brothers and sisters, and then you said four of them were put into this training school?
Yeah. Alfred Training School and St. John's Training School. And they were allowed to sexually abuse the children for 3 years. It went on. The police were aware of it after the first 10 years, but they allowed it to continue to happen because of the church's power. They didn't believe the children that ran away and told the horrors that were going on in there. They thought they were fabricating it all. And then they found out differently and ended up charging some of the priests, brothers as they called them.
And I've heard horror stories of what happened to the kids in there.
Well, they used to make the kids run around outside naked in the winter time. Or clean a floor with a toothbrush, and they come in the middle of the night with their hoods on and grab the kid and beat him with a belt, call him all kinds of vulgar names that the child didn't even know what they were talking about, or lock him up in a little cage for weeks at a time. Cage so small they had to crouch down to get into. And just repeatedly sexually abused them. And let them think that it was because they had done something wrong, or they were bad, or they were sinners. So the children that came out of there, the vast majority ended up either dead or in prisons or addicts or all three. Mm-hmm. And I believe the Children's Aid were responsible for sending a lot of these kids there because they classified them as unmanageable. You didn't have to commit a crime to go there, you just had to be classified unmanageable, whatever that means.
Which could be just that they're upset that they got taken from home.
Yes. Or maybe hyperactive or got into any trouble. Most kids do. We don't see many rich children. Most of them are in poor families. Or that are fluctuations.
When you look back, do you think, do you have any ideas on what you would suggest as solutions or things that you'd like to see done? Or?
I'd like to see that children's aid be held responsible for any abuse that happens to the children while they're in the care of the children's aid. In cases where they don't settle out of court and go to court for putting the children in these dangerous places. I believe if the foster parents were checked out more thoroughly, that a lot of this wouldn't happen. And I don't know how much a foster child or a foster parent is paid, but I think they should be given enough money to properly provide for the child and not feel that they're given enough money so that they can provide without having to dip into their own money type of deal.
So that's where a lot of the negative verbal abuse comes from. It costs money to go up to take you to school or take you to hockey games or take you here. Everything costs money and you complain about it.
Yes.
So this is happening enough.
I don't know who funds the children's aid, but I'm sure they could give the foster parents a raise, and in fact they should. It's another thing I think should be done.
They're funded by the Ministry of Community, Family, and Children's Services. And one other thing I'm wondering about is records. Like, there's a secrecy, the whole thing, and this goes into accountability. When a child is abused, if it's reported, these cases of abuse get recorded on what are called severe occurrence reports. The records is one way to get that accountability, but they're kept secret from the public. Access under confidentiality rules.
Yes, that's something that should also be changed. I think that any person that wants the records, not only should they be granted them, it should be a right to obtain these records, whether they're whether there's abuse involved in them or not. I believe anybody that wants to have the records should be able to obtain them. In keeping them secret, it just makes me think that they're hiding something. Especially when you turn a certain age, I believe that you should definitely, if you want to seek out your real parents or your other siblings, if you might have some, or because these things, if they're not dealt with, can really interfere with somebody's growth. So that's another change that should definitely take place, is access to these records, free access without a red tape and all the bullshit.
So you yourself wanted your own records at one time?
Yes, I did. I wanted to know where a certain little was, and I wasn't given them. I think it would be a good idea to have some people that went through the Children's Aid to get together with the administration of the Children's Aid Society and have a meeting, various meetings, and talk about needs of the children and try to put together a course of action where these things can come about, like giving more money to the foster parents, like getting the records, being accountable for abuse issues and other topics. I'm sure the children's aid have a lot on their list also that they would like to see done or changed. And just to get together and try to make some changes. Good stuff. Step in the right direction. Definitely needs some changes done.
Your family now?
Yes, I am in touch with all the remainder of my family that's living. Unfortunately, my family has over 100 years of being incarcerated in the system. On either the children's aid, the training schools, and or the prisons. It's an easy number to say, it's a hard number to do. Not many families can say that. I'm not ashamed of it, nor am I boasting about it. But it's just something that happened that should never have taken place in the first place. Becomes what he learns. We have to make sure that children are used when they're growing up. Otherwise, we'll probably read every prison that we built. We are.